All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of the Porchcast. My name's
21.
Yeah, 21. Yeah, we can finally drink. That's right. My name is Tristan. I am one of the co-hosts, and Jesse Brookstein over here from Call to Arms Brewery is
Howdy. Our
other co-host for the day. And we're also really pumped to welcome on Bess Doherty.
Hi.
And Peter Mazza.
That's it.
That's right, from Wincoop. That's right. We are broadcasting from the basement of Wincoop in the barrel room, right?
Yeah, this is my happy place.
Yeah.
So this area used to be an improv comedy theater, and for reasons I will not discuss, they are no longer here. And
did Wayne Brady just keep popping up trying to improv while you were brewing?
Being a dick.
Yeah.
So while corporate is taking their time trying to figure out, eventually we hope this space will become a speakeasy / barrel age beer kind of room.
Cool.
In the meantime, I'm just going to keep filling it with barrels.
Until you can't breathe anymore.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's going to be great.
Do we have any Game of Thrones fans in the house?
Yeah. Big fan, but not caught up on the season at all.
Okay, then I won't ruin anything. But for those of you who do watch the last episode, there was a big tie-in in being neck deep in things, bodies.
I'm kind of excited
in
now
wood?
That I haven't seen anything.
Because we're neck deep in wood.
We're neck. Oh, I see what you did there.
Whoa, look at me.
So tell us a little bit about this wood that we've got around us. I mean, I see a lot of Lal's whiskey barrel, and that gives me great wood. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So much wood for
Lal's.
Yeah,
so much wood for Lal's.
No, really what it comes down to is the boys from Lal's and I have had a good relationship since before Lal's was even a distillery.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alex, their barrel manager, pointed out at their last release party for the wheat whiskey that we've known each other for over 7 years.
Wow.
When we were just like little kids with bright twinkles in our eyes, dreaming of our careers, and now we're both actually fulfilling those dreams.
Yeah.
And they,
I was gonna say the twinkle's gone. Is that like a?
Oh, we still have twinkles.
Yeah.
But now we're actually doing it, so the twinkles are kind of subdued.
Yeah. You're making the twinkles into realities.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm giving other people twinkles now, but it's partly because of that relationship I've always had with the boys from Lal's, and partly because they just really like the beer that I put in there. So
yeah. Tell us about some of that beer. What kind of Wincoop beer gets the Lal's treatment?
Oh, everything. So right now, these rye whiskey barrels, they are empty, but we had our Rye-Tio Old Chap, which is an imperial rye stout that's aged in rye barrels. So three different kinds of rye malt aged in rye that we're actually have another batch in fermentation. We're going to move into the barrels soon. So I also name all of my barrels.
Yeah,
that's
I noticed that.
My way of keeping track of them. So the rye barrels are my existential philosopher series. These ones right up front are my gods or goddesses of brewing or fermentation.
Nice.
And those have an imperial brown ale with Colorado grown cherries. Behind them, you'll have the Dead Rapper series, which is a gingerbread stout.
Yes.
We just got a couple of their wheat whiskey barrels that I'm going to put an
that's
imperial
a new release,
malt
right?
liquor single hopped with El Dorado in.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sound great.
That sounds
I'm just going to take two amazing. Of the hardest get barrels in Colorado and throw malt liquor in.
Because zero's given.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's right.
It sounds delicious to me and the boys at Lal's, so that's what we're rolling with. So
now, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, your All's Barrel series has grown tremendously over the past few years. Is that pretty accurate to say?
It's very accurate.
Yeah.
About a year and a half ago, I was given control of the barrel program.
Yeah.
So my first task, we had about 20 barrels in-house at that time. Mm-hmm. So first project was to go through and actually taste them, which I don't know the last time that's been done. We had to get rid of about 6, 7, 8 of the barrels. In that first year, I more than doubled the barrel program with getting rid of some, and I just got the okay from our powers that be to double the program again this year. Wow. So against that wall, we have a bunch of fresh Napa Cab barrels that I brewed a Saison to go in. So I'm hoping it'll be pink. And those ones are named after LGBTQ rights activists.
Cool. Fantastic.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, that's awesome. So how many, what capacity, you know, in terms of the number of barrels now are we at here?
We're over 60 now.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. And, just kind of to get everyone caught up real quick, what's your official title? I know that is it the barrel mistress or what is
I prefer barrel troll.
Barrel troll.
Yes.
All right. Fantastic.
I just hide in a basement with all my barrels.
Where do you debung? I mean, not debung. Where do you debarrel? Right here? Where do you?
No, we just move them over by the serving tanks. We have a little separate room right here that has four conditioning tanks that we do all of our barrel age stuff in.
Gotcha. Just to paint the picture for the listeners here, we're in this, you know, super cool antiquated basement that you said dates back to what year?
The late 1890s.
1890s.
Yeah, it's a huge swath of basement space down here, barrels spread all over the place, and no drains that I can see, so it's hard to imagine debarreling here. That's cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, on this podcast, we definitely want to dive deeper in kind of the rich history of Wincoop Brewing and find out a little bit more about the family tree and also what you guys have, you know, going on right now in this current day and age. But we also have a lot to catch up on from our previous podcast. I'm not sure who all kind of listened in, but the state of Colorado craft beer is in flux right now. There's a lot going on. And there's also a lot going on nationally. So let's kind of get to those. But before we do, I just want to remind everyone about our sponsor, our lovely sponsor for the Porchcast, which is First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, located at 26th and Larimer. They are a pour-your-own draft system. Have you guys ever been to a beer festival? Do you all go to beer festivals? And what's your style? And when you're there, do you try to really stick to like one specific path? We'll take GABF for example. What's your approach?
GABF, I pick a style per night.
Yeah.
In the past few years, I just haven't given a fuck because I'm working most of the time.
Sure.
But when I was just a little plebe going to it, I would pick a style per night and stick with only that style, or like super hard to come by stuff if they still had it out and I knew I wanted to try it, because otherwise you get way too drunk.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, that's a good route to go. What about you, Jesse? Do you
I just kind of try to find the ones that are a bit off the beaten path. Like you go and see lines, you know, backed up behind Three Floyds, and then you go over to Devil's Backbone, and there'd be nobody there, and they have some of the best beer at the fest, and you can just session it and really enjoy yourself. I don't really try to set any kind of real path, because you end up getting pulled in 100 different directions. You lose all your friends within seconds of walking into the space, but yeah, I just like trying to find the little easy drinking, the best Oktoberfest I can possibly find.
Sure. Well, the great thing about First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen is that they have 40 drafts, all different styles. You can go through and actually pour your own beer and sample as much or as little of that beer as you want. You have an RFID chip, which just measures the amount of pours that you have, the number of ounces that you pour into your glass, and you can sample little bits, or if you want to enjoy a full pour or something, much like at a beer festival, you're in control of the game. It's a pour-your-own draft system at First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, located at 26th and Larimer here in Denver, Colorado. So big thanks to our sponsors there. But yeah, let's kind of jump into it. We are kind of, I think, about 2 weeks now-ish out from big news about the Colorado Brewers Guild losing 14 key members. You know, breweries that range from the likes of New Belgium, Odell, Oscar Blues, Left Hand, all the way down to Mountain Sun. You also had True and, you know,
Renegade,
Four Noses. So it was kind of a big shakeup there. What was your all's initial take on that story?
Well, I actually am on the marketing committee for the Colorado Brewers Guild.
Sure.
So I'm obviously a little biased. I have a special place in my heart for what the CBG has done.
Yeah.
I think and we touched on this recently in our Call to Arms podcast as well, and I've talked to Nick from True about it. I'm definitely concerned, you know.
Yeah.
I understand why they split. I can see some of their concerns. I just think when you have two big groups fighting for the same cause, I don't know if you're going to have your energies split, and therefore you don't have that solidarity you might have when it's one trade union.
Sure.
My other thing, and this is just me, is I feel like there's been a lot of the word transparency gets dropped a lot. And I understand there's not been maybe the most transparency from the guild to its members. Communication is like the number one thing in life, right? Relationships, work, anything, communication. But I wonder if the people who branched off had put as much energy into the current guild as they had into forming their own, if maybe they could have built the CBG into something stronger themselves. You know, we all have our personal differences and all that, but it takes a lot to start your own trade guild, and it's a lot of work and a lot of effort, and maybe that effort could have been put forth. You know, Steve over at the guild works really hard, you know?
Absolutely.
He's the marketing, I see him in these marketing meetings, and I see what he's trying to do to drive the state of craft beer. So to hear people maybe question how hard they've been working, it was hard for me to hear. But
absolutely,
that's just my opinion. So,
what about you, Bess? What was your take?
Well, my initial reaction was with emojis, and it was...
I remember that. I saw that.
The smiling poop with arrows to hand pointing down, as in, shit's going down. And I think what best sums it up, my friend Tom Dargan, who was one of the former brewers at Wing Coop, equated it to when your best friends get divorced.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see. Like, I understand some of both sides, but I don't think this was the right solution.
Sure, absolutely.
And I'm not saying there wasn't work to be done or issues that needed to be resolved,
mm-hmm.
but I think, like Jesse was saying, branching off and creating two separate guilds that people have to pick and choose which one they're going to be a part of.
Sure.
Because most of these breweries can't afford to be part of two separate guilds.
Absolutely.
That's just dumb and silly. And we need to be united front, especially with the liquor store bills coming about. Like,
sure.
The bill Hicks signed in, I don't think ever would have happened if the guild had that united front and had all their energy invested into it.
Yeah, I wanna lend my take too, because I think that people automatically assume that because we broke the story, that all of a sudden we were fully behind this split. You know, we did kind of report the news as fairly as possible, and we reached out to both sides. And unfortunately, only the side of Craft Beer Colorado responded in the time that you know we allowed, about 5 hours from when the news officially broke to when we actually reported the story. But you know, I completely agree. And talking to both sides of the issue, you know, I spoke with you know, Tim from Strange and Brian from Renegade and even Win O'Dell, and you know, I have to agree that it's really tough to A, run a brewery, and B, start up an entirely new guild. It seems like there's not a lot of structure in place. It seems like it's going to be several years before they even have the funding and the energy, like the infrastructure built out, let alone even the staffing to actually run a fully operational guild. So it seems like you're kind of setting back the Colorado, you know, infrastructure from a guild standpoint, setting that back several years with the hopes of potentially, you know, creating something completely different. Whereas they could have, like you all mentioned, put more effort into really focusing on bringing the guild together in a form that is more to their liking. You know, I think the one to play devil's advocate is, you know, you take a look at the fact that Breckenridge is still on the board, and the fact that, you know, a lot of people put a lot of time and energy into trying to craft and change the grocery store bill to a way that's more amicable for breweries, and yet a lot of it still didn't reach to the point of fully accomplishing what was set out from the get-go. What is, in your opinion, could have been done better, and what, in your opinion, also was done successfully to try to say, you know, the Guild was working towards that solution?
For me, I mean, it's funny because there's so many layers to this. There's infighting within our craft industry between guys, say, the size of, I'm not saying they feel this way, but say someone the size of Four Noses or something like that.
Sure.
Then they're trying to get shelf space, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have breweries such as O'Dell, New Belgium, who are also branching off of the CBG with them, who are dominating a lot of that shelf space. So it's not just a fight against Anheuser-Busch. It's not just a fight against Coors. It's a fight, if you want to look at it, really, it's a fight against shelf space against people that you're branching off with and starting this new guild with. So is there... Where does that divide drawn? Like, who are you truly trying to figure out?
Is the grass really greener?
Is the grass greener? And you use the analogy of, like, a relationship, and it's kind of like that. It's like, would it have been better to, like, try to stay with your spouse, or did you just find this cute little girl on the side, and you guys went on some dates,
this
and next
easy.
Thing you know, you leave the family,
yeah.
and you're, you know, living in Florida together. But it's like, sorry, what was your exact question for this?
I think... What could have been done better to as a collective unit? And I think that, you know, now that we're also I want to amend that question to say that now that we're in a current state that we are, you know, what's the best way moving forward that both groups can kind of work towards promoting craft beer? Because at the core, we just want craft beer to succeed in Colorado.
Exactly. And yeah. Sorry to lose my train of thought there, because I feel like there are so many... I feel this could be its
yeah.
own two-hour program just
oh,
discussing
for sure.
this.
Yeah.
But I think there's so much that goes on in politics that we just can't control. You know, talking to Steve and talking to the guys at the current guild, like, they were only getting so much information that they could, and people were sitting down with Hick, and they were trying to make it happen. But, like, it's very easy to say... Oh, you know what, CBG should have just taken care of that. But, like, they were doing what they could. They were lobbying the ways they could. Mm-hmm. When you have multi-million-dollar corporations like King Soopers and Safeway, and they're pushing back against the small brewers like us, they're probably going to win out overall.
Yeah.
And that's really shitty, and I hate the way it is, but that's America. And
that's reality.
It's corporation and
yeah.
corporate
yeah.
greed at its very finest. But I hate this, just people just to look at the CBG and say, they didn't do enough. And it's like, well, how much did you do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Now, kind of spinning off of that last point that you brought up about Hick, you know, signing the compromise, or at least the, you know, the bill that was amended, I'd love to hear your all's take. Because from my point of view, it seems like if this vote would have gone to ballot, which it was looking like it was going to do, It would have been the worst possible scenario, in that grocery stores would have been able to start serving full strength alcohol immediately, which means all the mom and pop liquor stores that are located right next to them would then probably go out of business, lose a ton of business to the grocery stores, who would then have full strength alcohol sold within their own buildings, which are just, you know, feet away from these mom and pop liquor stores. Whereas the current compromise that's set forth, I believe, is 20 licenses over 20 years. First 5 years, I think, are a no-go. And so it gives time for these mom-and-pop liquor stores to either decide whether they want to sell their liquor license to these grocery stores or compete with them and prep with it over the next 5 years.
Is there like a 1,500-foot rule?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So many
little tiny
outs,
details,
you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
But it seems like with this bill, at least... You know, it was going to happen either way. Grocery stores were going to be able to sell full strength alcohol eventually, but this at least allows time for these stores, for these liquor stores to prep. Am I correct in this thinking?
I don't know. I'm highly emotional about this subject,
sure.
just because my background is from a liquor store,
yeah.
and granted, it was one of the larger ones,
mm-hmm.
and we knew because I've been fighting this battle for years
sure.
now through the liquor store for almost a decade
mm-hmm.
at this point. And while I know, like, my friends that still work at the liquor store are probably going to be fine, I know the people across the street.
Absolutely.
I know the people catty corner from us, and I know that they will not survive in this environment.
Yeah.
And all for what? Because you were too fucking lazy to walk across the parking lot
yeah.
it's not worth it in my eyes.
I agree.
It's a bunch of fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
These are families. They are the people I went to high school with. Like,
yeah.
Like I said, emotionally.
Yeah.
Duh.
And even, it's, you know, it reaches farther than just the actual grocery stores. You know, you hear all of these stories of startup breweries that, you know, aren't able to go out to the corporate offices of these yeah. Giant grocery
the
stores.
The hoops you have to jump through yeah. to get into one of the chains are fucking absurd.
And additionally, you have to be able to produce enough alcohol
yeah.
to actually be in all of the stores within that
Which,
that region, you know. So
I would say the majority of Colorado brewers could never do.
Exactly.
I know Wincoop could never do.
Yeah.
And I get there had to be air quotes, by the way. There had to be this like meeting ground,
sure.
but I don't believe there had to be like. I'm about to go on a rant, but we have been thriving in this environment for how many years?
Yes.
Things have been fine. Our craft brew scene is what it is because of the laws currently in place.
Sure.
Is it annoying to have to go to a liquor store instead of the grocery store where you already are? Maybe a tiny bit in the grand scheme of your entire life? No.
No, I agree.
People just forget that, like
not.
You're saying, these are family-run businesses. Like,
yeah.
having now owned my own business for about a year, like, it's very stressful when, like, you don't have anybody in your seats, right?
Sure.
You're like, will we be able to keep the doors open the next day? And we're not really battling against these mega corporations. Now you have this liquor store next to a Safeway, which has all the money at its disposal. And they've run their propaganda campaign in such a powerful way that... However, I used to work with some folks at other breweries that were like, well, why is it bad? When these are people that worked in the craft beer industry that didn't even understand why it was a bad thing for what the Colorado scene.
And like, what it comes down to for me is it just takes money out of Colorado and it kills our livelihood in Colorado.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there's something that I want to bring up that I think that a lot of people don't even think of, too, and it's the fact that if you're really that lazy, you could even use my former employer, which is Drizzly, and have alcohol delivered to your house now. You know, it's if you're really that fucking lazy, there's something for you.
Yeah.
And you don't have to compromise this great system that we have in place, which allows craft beer to thrive. And,
yeah.
and you know, it's going to be interesting. I think that there's still kind of rumblings of a final push to try to prevent this from happening, but we'll see what really plays out.
Well, it sounds like the big guys aren't even that happy with it either.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I probably have like 20 friends in my life that I've met through going to liquor stores because I went a lot and I still go
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
But like, these are friends. I'm not going to make the friends with the guys at Safeway. I'm just not.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much to it.
Yeah. Now, Bess, you kind of touched on your storied history and kind of the alcohol industry, starting with liquor stores and now with Wincoop. You've been with Wincoop for how long?
Just over 4 years that I've been paid.
now touch on that prepaid area. Have you been in? Were you an intern here, or kind of? Like,
I was.
Yeah.
It all started through my former liquor store job. I got a trip to Belgium, which
sure.
was the most epic, life changing experience. And coming back from that, I remember my mom picked me up at the airport, and I just started crying.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be back there. I need to make beer. I don't know what to do with my life, but I know it's not okay.
Yeah.
So about 2 weeks after that, I enrolled in the Siebel online course for concise brewing. And just the fates aligned that year because the day after I started the course, we being Denver off the wagon.
Yeah.
Former Denver beer, booze, everything blog.
Sure.
We came here to make our first birthday beer, and I met Andy Brown, the head brewer at the time, and we just hit it off, and PJ Hoberman was like, oh, best just started brewing school. You guys should chat. Yeah. So we did, and he let me come work for free. It was so generous of him. But he was really cool about it to where I would send in my syllabus for the week and he would because I was still working full-time at the liquor store.
Sure.
So he would schedule whatever I was studying that week for my days off from the liquor store so I could come get hands-on experience.
Wow.
And then, thankfully, Josh's wife got accepted to med school up at CSU, so he had to move, and I got a job.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So tell us about, you know, WinCoop. You know, I think one of the things that I've discovered over the past couple of years is just how storied this this brewery has been in terms of, you know, the employees and the family tree of brewers that have come through here. Tell us a little bit about that and share some of those interesting stories that you've experienced over the years.
So our family tree is a little absurd.
Would you mind diving into it a little bit?
Yeah.
I want to hear where...
Because we actually have a flow chart on the fridge.
Oh, you do?
Upstairs.
That's awesome. Yes. Is there a secret society? I feel like maybe that you all have like a WinCoop...
There really
like,
should be.
Yeah, like a handshake or something.
But we refer to this as a launchpad brewery.
Okay.
Where a lot of people get their start in the industry here and then go on to bigger and better things.
Sure.
Obviously, not everyone does, but the track record is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I know right now we have Jason's and Brennan at Ratio.
Yep.
Duh. Brad at Prost, Josh at Wonderland, Tom Dargan, who runs, like, he's with Gordon Biersch and gets to travel around the world and open up breweries.
Yeah.
That's fucking rad.
That sounds like the worst job ever.
Thomas at Ska is one of our former brewers.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Cool.
That fucker.
Matt Hughes,
who I fucking adore.
Gold Spot Brewery.
Yeah.
Special right. place in my heart for that guy.
Top three nicest guys in the industry, probably.
Yeah.
Him and Brad.
Greg is now at Sleeping Giant. God, I'm forgetting so many. We had one guy that went to Stranahan's. He was before my time. I don't know him. Oh, Craig went to RAR down in Texas.
Yep.
He's their head brewer. But yeah, like, I didn't realize it when I got hired at WinCoop, but I inherited like 20 older brothers.
That's insane.
And it's been awesome because like the guys that trained me worked with these other guys who worked with these guys.
Yeah.
And now I've met all of them
totally.
And they all look out for me.
That's
like
awesome.
I'm their kid sister. And it's that's part of why I got into the Colorado craft beer scene was because of that family aspect of it. And then coming to WinCoop, I had no idea that it would be, like, this much family.
Totally.
It's kind of annoying at times.
Well, I think there really needs to be a WinCoop, you know, alumni beer festival that showcases all the beer from the breweries that you all work at now.
That would be really awesome. I've actually talked with Home Office about doing something like that because we used to have a festival called Beers of the Year.
Sure.
Where we would pull out kegs of every beer we made that year and invite our former brewers back.
That's really neat.
So I'm trying to bring that back this year. And if anything, I really just want, like, a night at Whiskey Bar with all the boys.
Absolutely.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah. And you can't forget about Shannon Berner, who is one of our really great friends, who's now at Great Divide doing marketing. So,
yeah.
It's, we had Shannon on in one of, I think, maybe our second or third episode of the Porchcast ever recorded. That was probably maybe even 2 years now. But yeah, she's over at Great Divide. So.
Yeah, I remember when she first started, I was trying to take Baby Bird under my wings.
Yeah.
And I took her over to Great Divide and she's like, wait, you mean they're this close?
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, sweetie. You're fine. I'm here.
Now explain, when I see you at beer festivals and also just in general, there's a lot of unicorn and sparkles. Can you kind of go into detail about that a little bit? Because I think that's very...
And was there really a sparkle beer?
Oh, shit, yeah,
because
there was.
I'm completely going to steal that idea from you.
As you should.
That was awesome.
Wait, when was this? Because I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I've done it multiple times.
Can you explain to our listeners exactly what this sparkle beer was
legendary.
All about? Yeah.
So, I hate to give away trade secrets, but I will because it sparkles, duh. So there is some stuff on the market called disco dust. It's not cocaine at all, but it's non-water soluble edible glitter. So we have found that you can there are multiple ways of adding the glitter to the beer. We just do keg at a time, usually pour it in the keg filler. You can also take the spear out, pour the disco dust straight in the keg, and then just fill it with beer like normal.
Sure.
The only problem is you have to agitate it every few pours to keep the glitter in suspension.
Interesting.
But yeah, glitter beer is totally a thing. And if you drink enough, you will pee glitter.
Oh my gosh. I feel like disco dust is about to just hit it big with all of our listeners. Everybody out there is like, ooh, disco dust.
Yeah.
Not just for raves, also for brewing.
Right.
I've peed green after St. Patty's Day, but never glitter.
Oh, that's God, incredible. It was amazing. So yeah. The first time was on my birthday a few years ago. And
was this kind of a birthday-inspired beer?
It was actually Alex that used to be at Upslope. Him and I were discussing the glitter beer.
Sure.
We originally made it, the first two kegs were for his going away party and my birthday. And so my birthday was on the same night as Denver Whiskey Club softball team game. And I'm the catcher, and our pitcher has the same birthday as me. So it just turned into a shit show.
Sure.
Obviously. And that night at Tui's, I went pee. And I always look down because, duh, it was glitter everywhere. So
oh
I checked
gosh.
My pockets. I'm like, I made the keg days ago.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my softball gear, so I don't have pockets.
Yeah.
There's, holy shit, I peed glitter. So I ran out to the bar, yelled that I peed glitter, got a standing ovation. And
it was the most amazing moment of your life.
It was so amazing. And since then, I've peed glitter a few other times. And now I really want to donate my body to science so they can cut me open when I'm dead and see if there's...
sea sparkles
if it's
everywhere.
Like, glitter explosion.
So every couple of times you have to go re-agitate the keg?
Yeah. That's the pain. That's why I only do it for certain occasions.
Sure.
And the unicorn thing has just been since I was a child. I have a picture of me on my fourth birthday with a unicorn cake. I love unicorns.
Yeah.
Well, the breweries and SOPs for glitter.
I think Austin Beer Works, wherever Alex is, and then Three Weavers in LA.
Okay.
I taught
oh, yeah.
Alex the ways of glitter.
Alex
beer.
Noel?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Her
Sweet.
And I get in trouble at Pink Boots meetings.
So,
yeah.
You said Austin Beer Works,
mm-hmm.
Three Weavers, and now Pasteur Street out in Vietnam, is that correct?
He actually just moved back to Tennessee.
Oh, he did?
Is opening a new brewery.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Man, I think you might have just broken a story there for us.
Oh, shit.
I don't know. Oh.
God damn it.
Well, I think we're about to get kicked out of here from a tour, but before we run out of time here, I want to hear a little bit more about what's going on here at Wenku. What should people be looking out for besides the amazing barrel-aged beers that are coming out here and what's coming down the pipeline?
So, honestly, I think people should be looking out for all of our beers because we just underwent a 3.5-month remodel where we essentially gutted the entire brewery and
you
installed
have a, new system,
a brand
right?
new JV Northwest 20-barrel all conicals. We finally got rid of our open tops, which I'm on the fence about.
Yeah.
But... so yeah, all the beer coming out is like all of us brewers are blown away at how good our beer can actually be at this point. So between that and the barrel program and just the freedom to do one-offs anymore, we're getting a lot more experimental time. So
that's really exciting.
And it's only taproom stuff.
Yeah.
So
stop
people
into the
have
taproom.
To come down here.
Yeah.
And I'll throw glitter at them.
What am I drinking right now? Because it's absolutely incredible.
Right, Dio, old chap.
Which is what?
For
the listeners.
Imperial Rye Stout aged in Laws Rye whiskey barrels.
It's phenomenal.
Thank you.
No, it's interesting because Wenkoop, you know, is one of Denver's oldest breweries. Is it the oldest that's still active?
It's,
oldest,
it's
right? Denver's oldest.
Denver's
yeah.
oldest active?
Colorado's first brew pub, Denver's oldest brewery.
Wow, that's impressive. And you all are still continuously undergoing growth and change, and I think that's most evident in your beer, but also with the new system. How long was the old system in place?
About 17 years.
17 years. Wow, that's pretty dated in the beer world.
Oh God, yeah. It was terrible. Yeah. It became a safety hazard.
Sure.
I do miss the girl. She was great.
Where'd she go?
A storage unit.
Okay. No one bought her.
I don't want to sell her to anyone because she was a safety hazard. I'm a brewery hoarder.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's a cool part. And one of the challenges I faced coming in at Wing Coop was that there's a not so great reputation to it, but I knew what the guys here were doing. I knew the exciting new things coming out. And I knew it was going to be a part of something different. And now it's just a matter of getting people to give a second try.
Yeah, it seems to have come full circle. And, you know, I've been really impressed with the stuff that you guys have been churning out lately. And I really wanted to sit down and chat with you guys because it seems like it's a new chapter. And I think that people should really come by and check out some of the amazing stuff that you guys are producing. So,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing that we like to do at the end of each episode is go around and talk about a notable beer that maybe you've had throughout the week. I unfortunately have been on this really stupid diet, this Whole30 diet. And it's because my girlfriend, who I love very much, she wanted to improve on her eating habits, and I because she hadn't been feeling very well, and luckily it's definitely changed things. And so we decided to go this full month of eating pretty much just meat, vegetables, fruit, and like nuts and whatnot.
Oh no, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, but so no dairy, no soy, no beer for the most part. I already came in with the caveat of I'm gonna have a few cheat days and sure. I need to drink beer because that's what I do for a living. But yeah. I've definitely cut back on beer a lot and alcohol, pretty much only having one day a week where I drink. So unfortunately, I'm not gonna be able to chime in on this one. But I'd love for you all to share some of the maybe one notable beer that you had this week.
That actually comes at a good time. I just had my first bottle of Oak Theory from Casey. And Chris Bell, my business partner, got it for his birthday, and we cracked it the other day. And it was one of the best beers I've ever had. Yeah. And one of the best barrel-aged, wild, sour beers I've ever had, made in the United States. It was like a bottle of Cantillon. Yeah. It was just the aromatics on it, the taste as it warmed and opened up. It was just, I wanted to, like, text Troy immediately or maybe sext him at that point. It was the beer was, yep. Great job, Troy. That beer was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. What about you?
No, I'm pretty much on the same party train as Tristan I haven't really been drinking much. All right. At
Where are
all.
You people?
I know. I don't even know how to do sometimes that. Sometimes like, we have to be that? Adults.
Have you seen the movie Fed Up, the documentary?
No.
You should watch Katie Couric was behind it.
Okay.
It's basically about manufactured foods and sugars and how they created this this society of obesity.
It's insane.
It's like supersize me.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's insane once you actually look into it and you're part of this diet, you actually have to like look at what, you know, even like looking at bacon, you're like, oh, so bacon without any sugar or weird ingredients added costs so much more than bacon that has all this random gunk in it.
Yeah.
And it's because they, like, fill up your bacon with all these additives, and it's just like, all right, so it's not actually bacon anymore. It's just a bunch of other shit that's inside.
And the low-fat movement.
Yeah. But
I will say it's none of that shit, because diets are dumb. Yeah.
I completely agree.
Just like but I did have a port mango earlier today.
Oh, nice.
I fucking adore that beer.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything port does, I'm just like, well, yes, give that to me.
Yeah.
So
there's a reason why they crush it every year at GABN.
I know.
So, Peter, what about you?
So I've been really getting into peppers. I don't know what it is, but when it gets hot out, I like to eat really extremely spicy food. But one of the things, I went and saw one of my sous chefs last night. He made me dinner. He made me a shrimp scampi, and he had the Patty's chili beer from here.
Oh, nice.
It isn't really spicy, but like I like the chili flavor. Yeah, I love working with that. So, I mean, that's my last memorable beer experience.
That's awesome. Nice. Cool. Well, that wraps it for this episode of the Porchcast. Once again, we want to remind everyone to be sure to check out First Draft Taproom and Kitchen next time you're in Denver, Colorado. They're located at 26th and Larimer, and it's the adult Froyo version of yeah, it's basically adult Froyo.
I have to go. Like, I'm going to check that place out.
Yeah, it's so good.
Probably get in trouble.
You can go through. You can even blend flavors if you want, but I mean, it's go in and pour your own beer and try it out. So be sure to head to First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. Bess, Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jesse, thanks for being my co-host for this episode.
Cheers,
old chap, all day long. All right, thanks for tuning into the Porchcast. We'll catch you next time for episode 22.